Yes, okay, excellent. Well, good morning, everyone. This is our day two of our face-to-face meeting in Istanbul of the CCWG on Enhancing ICANN's Accountability. I remind you to please state your name before speaking for the transcript and for the remote participants that are not on the Adobe Connect room and that are only on the bridge, so anyone can identify who's speaking at the moment. And of course, the roll call will be those present in the Adobe Connect room at the moment, and if there is someone that is present in the audio bridge and that is not connected to the Adobe Connect room, I would kindly ask you to state your name at this point so you can be added to the roll call. Okay, I don't listen to anyone stating their name outside of the Adobe room. Well, we have a pretty packed agenda for the day. As you can see, we will be going through different aspects that we already discussed yesterday in some points, but we will be going deeper, and we will also be going through new aspects. Is there any way that we could have a scroll control for the rest of the participants in the Adobe Connect room? So anyone that wants to scroll up or down can do that. Yes, thank you very much. So, well, we will be going through a legal sub-team update. We will be speaking about the jurisdiction issue for some moments, of course. So we will be going through the affirmation of commitments review. We'll then have a coffee break only if we achieve our goals in time, of course. And we will be discussing as well the golden bylaws as an option and the community mechanisms. This will be a double session on community mechanisms. We'll have one before the break, and then we will resume right after lunch. And we will also be doing a recap of our progress of the 2 days, and we will be commenting with you the timeline and next steps that we might be envisioning for the future of the CCWG. And we will also open the public document structure preparation for discussion amongst the group. And then we will be able to build the trust statement and show it to you so you can, of course, comment on that. So with that in mind, is there anything that wants to be raised at this point, maybe something that we're not seeing in the agenda or any opposition to any of the points being in the agenda? No? Okay. So, I'm sorry? Okay. So the agenda has been approved, so we'll jump right into the first point of the agenda. Item number one is the legal sub-team update, and I would kindly ask staff to display the corresponding presentation on screen. Okay. Further down. There it is. That's the one. Thanks, Adam. Could you enable scrolling, please? Thank you. So, what was the purpose of the legal sub-team? Well, the purpose was to select the law firm to provide independent legal advice to the CCWG. The group has identified several areas, of course, that will be needing legal advice from independent and external advice as opposed to in-house counsel firm ICANN Legal. And that was the purpose of establishing this legal sub-team. The foundation of this legal sub-team was discussed in Frankfurt. You might recall that this is where we identified the need to have this independent legal advice. And there was also an open call for volunteers at the time. there was a chance for anyone that wanted to be a founding father to this legal subteam to join. And, of course, it remained open, and it remains open still. That is something that I want to be very emphatic about. This is an open group, and anyone can join anytime. So this is how this was founded. This is how we first constructed this compact team. It was, of course, thought to be a compact team because it is easier to carry out any coordination between the group and the legal firms and in a compact way rather than having maybe 80 or 160 person conversation with a legal law firm. So this is why we had it a compact group. The actual status is that, of course, the legal subteam drafted a scoping document. You have all been able to go through that scoping document. We have reviewed it with the larger group, and it remains open for contributions. This is meant to be, of course, a living document, a dynamic document. It's not a closed document, nor a final version of it as it stands at the moment. We also assessed two law firms, one being Adler & Colby, and the other one being Sidley & Austin. Sidley & Austin is currently working already, has been engaged with the CWG, and we have a member of them present, Mike. Everyone say hi to Mike. And he's... So he's part of Sidley's team that's here in Istanbul. We have also been having remote participation from Adler and Colbin's team. So we might have them present in the Adobe Connect or in the phone bridge. They are also following these sessions. And so the legal subteam decided to engage with both law firms. We are right now at the stage of finalizing the engagement letters, but it is a given that we'll be, in fact, engaging with both law firms. And the reason for the legal subteam deciding on engaging with both law firms is that when assessing each of them, there was the feeling in the legal subteam that Adler and Colvin had a wider experience from the legal subteam point of view with regards to California law and nonprofit law. And this doesn't mean, of course, that Sidley and Austin didn't have any expertise in this field, but we just felt that Adler and Collins had wider experience. So for the case being, of course, we know that we have to make this right, and we have just one shot. So for this, we needed the best advice we could get. And from the California nonprofit law point of view, that is why we engage with Adler and Colvin. But we also detected that there are needs that are not essentially or do not deal with California nonprofit law. We have other concerns, maybe antitrust law, maybe international jurisdiction issues, maybe some other sorts of issues that are not covered by Adler and Colvin, but are surely covered by Sidley and Austin. So this is why I just wanted to take you through how we got to the decision of engaging with both law firms. As messy as it can sound or it can be perceived, our aim is, of course, to coordinate very closely with both law firms and have them work together and, of course, avoid duplicating any work that might be done. And with regards to the California law point of view, we are designating Adler and Colvin, as I said, as the primary source, but not the only source of advice. We might double-check at some point some opinions that we get from them against those given by Sidley and Austin. So, as I said, this is intended to have the best legal advice that can be in hand for the CCWG and our work. And the first coordination call will happen tonight. We will be having this call at 8 p.m. Istanbul time. That is open, of course, for anyone that wants to join in. We have a room reserved for this. I believe it's room 19. Yes, that's correct, right? Room 19. Excellent. Thank you, Nancy. So room 19 will be the venue for this call. And as I said, this will be, of course, open to anyone that wants to join in. And the current team members are myself, David McCauley, Robin Gross, Greg Shatton, Becky Burr, Savina Mayer, Edward Morris, Thomas Schneider, Alice Munoz, Rafael Perez Galindo, Mark Carvel, Suzanne Redell, Parb Rumark, Pedro Ivo Ferriz da Silva, Julia Waldman, Finn Peterson, Jorge Cancio, Olga Cavalli, Thomas Rickert, Maura Gambassi, Atina Fraculi, Philip Corwin, Brixon Ivan Acosta Velasquez, Steve Crocker, Shehashish Goss, and Samantha Eisner from Icon Legal, which has been great in supporting the legal team in many aspects. And now the questions going forward or moving forward with this legal sub-team. As I said, this was envisioned to be a coordinating team, a compact team to lead there's more than meets the eye, of course, and not everybody that's on the list that I just showed has actually taken a participative stance in the legal sub-team work. I think that one of the most crowded calls we had was maybe with 7 people, so you can tell that it's compact in its actions. So moving forward with this, I would like to call for agreement within the room and, of course, the larger group on whether the sub-team should continue to be the link and the coordinating body between what the CCWG as a larger community is doing and the engaged law firms. And for that, I would like to ask you to, of course, tick with your green tick in the Adobe Connect to see if we have an agreement here or if there's any opposition as to having the legal sub-team to continue being this link and coordinator between the work of the CCWG and the legal law firms that have been engaged. So could you please signal with the green tick if you agree?
Sorry,
yes, Sebastian.
Sorry, it's Chris. Can I just ask you a question? Can you just clarify, explain what the link team will do? What's it actually going to do? Is it going to be the one that channels questions? Is it going to be what's it actually going to do?
Thank you very much for your question, Chris. That's very useful. And yes, the essential work of the legal sub-team would be channeling the questions and following with the legal, with the law firms engaged, that they answer in a timely fashion, etc. So they would do the follow-up on any questions risen by the community, and they would hand in these questions to the law firms. I will, of course, propose a couple of mechanisms for the wider community to interact. As I said, this is an open and will remain open for anyone that wants to participate. But we need to, of course, face the fact that having a conversation between 160 persons and a law firm might not be the more practical approach. So that's why I just want to make sure that should this legal sub-team continue to be the link between these law firms and the wider community, we have, of course, your agreement and your approval to move forward with this. I don't know if that answers your question, Chris. Thank you very much. Next, I have Sebastian and then Erica. Yes, Sebastian.
Thank you, Leon. Can't we have really a small team with real engagement? Because if not, if one day there all appears and decide to do something wrong, as we are here about transparency and accountability, I would like to have member really accountable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Erika?
I really would love you and this team to focus on one issue as well, besides the purely building this bridge and getting the legal question answered. This is how you will give the replies you will receive from the legal side and the question raised in a format to all of us that it can be easily followed. So what I would really love to have is a document when you would have the, and I'm sure you're thinking about it, so just let me elaborate on my idea, where you would have the questions, you would have the answer from the legal side, but the answer may have, you know, may raise questions as well. So it's not always just the answers. What I would love really to see from the legal side, the answers in saying, look, one could sort out this problem in the following way, but there are the barriers, you know, either because of the bylaws or there are the barriers because of California law. They could be overcome in the following way, or they can't be. So I would really love to have a document one can work with afterwards, so that not just, you know, that the people which are engaged can follow it, but everybody else as well, and can send in, you know, concrete comments to it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
We're thinking about it already, but just
absolutely.
Spend a lot of time on this one.
Thank you very much, Erica. It absolutely makes sense. Actually, as I said, we have already a legal scoping document that is supposed to be a living document. It's not a closed document, and that essentially reflects your concern that we wouldn't expect to have just a one-shot answer from the law firms, but instead we would be expecting to have an iterative process between the legal sub-team and the law firms as to some answers may raise in time some other questions for us to go back to the law firms and back and forth. So yeah, and that would also would need to be documented so that anyone that has the need to go to the document and review all the process through which we went at a certain point would be able to do so. Okay? So that is how we are thinking to carry out this task. Thank you. And so with regards to Sebastian's concern, yes, I agree that we need committed people in the legal sub-team, and I think that we do have committed people. Maybe not saying something doesn't mean that you're not reading through the list and you're not listening through the recordings and the transcripts, reading the transcripts, but rather maybe you don't have any opposition or nothing to really raise at that point. So I would like to, as compact as it can be, I would like to have that group remain open so that anyone can jump in at any time for transparency's sake and, of course, for accountability's sake. So now, as I said, I would like to get the agreement in the room, if I may, on whether this legal sub-team should remain the coordinating team and the link between the law firms and the wider CCWG. Could you please signal with a green tick in the Adobe Connect if you do agree that the legal sub-team should remain as the coordinator and link between the law firm and the CCWG? I see Sebastian is opposing. Okay. Okay, so from the green tick count, I only see one person that's not putting a green tick so far. That's Sebastian. So that would make me guess that the wider group agrees. So then the agreement is we have a majority of consensus here. and we'll have to move on this. Okay. So, as I said, this would remain open. We will have, as we do have already, a public mailing list. It will be open for everyone to subscribe or observe. And, of course, just those that are members of the Legal Staff Team would be able to post. And we will have open and recorded and transcribed calls and meetings. And as I said, the scoping document will remain dynamic and a living document. The information, if you want to subscribe to the list or you want to post to the list, is CCWG. You have all the information here. This presentation will be in turn uploaded to the wiki space. The wiki space address is also here, and the mailing archive can be consulted anytime at this URL as well. So with this, I'd like to Sebastian, do you want to raise something?
No, I think it's important to explain why I vote against.
Okay.
I think that we need to have a team in charge of that, and not an open team and too much people. I think that we may define a small team really in charge of this coordination. That's not to say that the legal team can't be with all those members and open, but those people responsible for this interaction must be clearly defined and a small group of people. Thank you.
Okay. So I think the answer to this or the exit to this challenge might be having the legal sub-team decide if they want to have an executive legal sub-team that can be as compact as possible. And then they, of course, will need to appoint the members, which, I mean, so far I think they have been already self-appointed with their participation in the call. So, yes, I think that we can do that. And I'd like to go to the next agenda item in our agenda today, and that is the jurisdiction issue. I'm sorry.
Hi, Sabine here. I just wanted to add that we kind of have that already, if I recall correctly, on the call, that actually a few people volunteered to be points of contact, so to speak, for the law firms. So I think we already have, in a way, that dedicated team of people. Thank you.
Thank you, Sabine. That's correct. That's why I just said that we, in a way, just had people that self-appointed to this task, and that's right. We're on the same page. We already have that. Thank you. So anyone wants to make another comment or question with regards to this point? No? Okay. So the next point on the agenda is the jurisdiction issue. Can we have the jurisdiction document displayed on the topic electro? The last version. So, as you know, the jurisdiction issue is something that has raised some concerns from different members of the community, and there has been a series of discussions in the email list with regards to this issue. And what we did is we set up a document that tries to review the different concerns and the different stances from different members of community that have raised this issue. And as soon as we are able to have it on screen, we will go through it. But I can begin with saying that we need to view jurisdiction issue from many perspectives. Jurisdiction may be, of course, the place where the organization has its headquarters. Jurisdiction may also mean the governing law for contracts. Jurisdiction may also mean those laws that will be applicable to the day-to-day administration of the organization as well. Jurisdiction may also mean having standing to sue or to be sued in a certain territory. And what else am I missing in the jurisdiction, from the jurisdiction point of view? I think that, well, of course, tax law, corporate law, etc. That might be applicable to the organization. So with this in mind, we ask the list to look at the issue as requiring some or making a list of requirements with regards to jurisdiction. Some discussions have been raised as to having ICANN's jurisdiction just change for the sake of changing jurisdiction, and I think that's something that is very dangerous at this stage, and we should be looking at the jurisdiction issue from a wider perspective and analyze if it is indeed something that needs to happen in first place, and if it does need to happen, does it have to be a Workstream 1 or a Workstream 2 issue? So, of course, since we haven't been able to have the document on the screen, I would like to, at this stage, open the floor for comments and questions with regards to jurisdiction in the room. So, I see, Becky, do you want to comment on this?
Yes. I understand that there are significant issues and concerns about where ICANN is headquartered, but I think it's important for us to be precise when we talk about this. That is really not determinative of jurisdiction, meaning a place in which a court has jurisdiction over ICANN. Anywhere that ICANN is actually engaged in business and is impacting people on the ground, ICANN may well be subject to the jurisdiction of the courts in that country. So the fact is that ICANN is subject to the jurisdiction of many courts around the world, not just courts in California, and that is a fact that exists now. There is a question of choice of law that is an important question, and that is generally in ICANN's contract. It elects to be subject to, it chooses the law of California to govern its commercial relationships. ICANN could just as easily decide that with respect, you know, that registries and registrars could elect a choice of law of you know, the UK or California or Japan. Those are business choices that ICANN can make. But when we talk about jurisdiction, I think there's often a confusion about you know, where ICANN can be hauled into court and made answerable or be held accountable. And it is not the case that ICANN is only subject to the jurisdiction of California courts.
Thank you very much for this, Vic, and this is very useful. And let's remind or let's go through where the current jurisdiction is set for ICANN. And this is some paragraph 8 of the Affirmation of Commitments, in which it states that ICANN affirms its commitment to B, remain a not-for-profit corporation headquartered in the United States of America with offices around the world to meet the needs of a global community. And we also have Article 18, Section 1, with regards to the offices and seal of ICANN, and it states that the principal office for the transaction of the business of ICANN shall be in the County of Los Angeles, State of California, United States of America. ICANN may also have an additional office or offices within or outside the United States of America, as it may from time to time establish. And that addresses exactly what you were saying, Becky. It's different having the choice of law for business than that will be applicable for accountability reasons. So are there any other comments or questions at this point? Tijani, yes. I'm sorry?
Take the cue from the other people.
Okay, I'm sorry. I see Pedro.
Yeah, thank you, Leon. Just wanted to restate what I've commented on an email I've sent on Friday to the list. So I think we need to differentiate between jurisdictional issues that we may eventually come across, and we are coming across while discussing the community powers and also the mechanisms that related to accountability. We need to differentiate that from the question of jurisdictional options, which is related to the place where ICANN should be headquartered or have its legal presence, which, well, this second, let's say, domain should be, according to my government, probably should be discussed within the context of Workstream 2. And so I think we should to have initially have this to this in mind. And with regards to Workstream 1, apart from discussing this specific issues, like, for example, affirmation of commitments that you have just mentioned, I think it's important that we clearly indicate where are the limitations of the current jurisdiction. So since we are making that split between requirements and implementation, and so requirements being what we want to have and implementation meaning what we can get, so we should clearly indicate what we want to achieve and we can't achieve, given the limitations imposed by the current jurisdiction. So I think this is something that we should perhaps prioritize at this moment at Workstream 1. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. So just let me get this. So you're saying that this would be a Workstream 2 issue, right?
Talking about the different alternatives for jurisdiction. So ICANN is today in California, but maybe should be somewhere else, and let's discuss about different alternatives that we have. But at the moment, I think for Workstream 1, we should clearly indicate where are the limitations of today's jurisdiction. So.
Elaborate and give us some examples of these limitations that you can or so far have identified that should be discussed within Workstream 1?
Well, I think it's up to the legal advisor firm or to the experts, you know, of this public expert group to say where are the limitations. But from what we have right now, which is this, which are these responses from John Say, I think one of the answers says that the board is the one who needs to have the final say about everything related to ICANN. So maybe that's not the correct, but this is at least was one of the answers given by John Day. So there's where I see one limitation, for example.
Well, my understanding is that if we do this right and we address major concerns that, of course, will be discussed with the mechanisms, powers, etc., there might not be at all the need to change jurisdiction if everything is in place, right?
Yeah, it would be in a scenario, yes.
Thanks, Pedro. Now I see James Cannon. James, could you please?
Hi, James. I think possibly echoing some of Pedro's comments, I think if this is to be, if the issue of jurisdiction is to be a Workstream 1 issue, it needs to have a driver behind it. There's a number of conversations around we would like ICANN to have this jurisdiction, we would like it to be there, but for it to be Workstream 1, it needs to have a solid driver. We've identified an accountability issue that we are now looking to solve via a movement of jurisdiction. If we're to look at a preferable jurisdiction, then maybe it could become a Workstream 2 item. But we need a solid driver of something that has been identified, there is an issue with the current jurisdiction that the CCWG or the legal team has identified a possible solution being a movement of jurisdiction rather than the other way around of we like this jurisdiction, we would like ICANN to move there. That could be a Workstream 2 issue.
Okay. Thanks, James. Next in the queue is Tijani.
Thank you, Leon. I will repeat what the other said. I think that we had a consensus that the jurisdiction would be in the Workstream 2. So we want to win time. We are in a very tight timelines. So perhaps it should not be open now because it is useless in my point of view.
Very much, Tijani. Next in the queue is Chris Despain. Chris, please. No? Okay. So next in the queue is Eric Kaman.
Funny that I always follow Chris. yeah, since it's a bit strange. But I just want to come to one point where I think we have to be super cautious. So if we really thinking in the time frame we have ahead of us in finding a new location, which we think suits this environment better, I think this will be super complicated. It will not just make the process complicated for the United States government, but I can't see that Congress is going to support it. So I wonder if there's not another way of all the complaints, the legal and judicial complaints, which some of the community fear, back to our legal advisors are preparing. So when we have these questions and answers and we get closer to understanding more the concrete fear. Some of them we have already seen, but I would imagine more will come up. So the answers may provide alternative solutions without moving the location elsewhere. In many cases, I think there are, like in international law, there are many ways of framing certain things, how, to shape the environment for a particular organization well. There's not a single answer, so there are many different answers which are more suitable for an international ecosystem like we are. But I think this is something I think will be crucial for the for the legal advisors to look into this and to give the appropriate, advices or hints so that we then can follow up.
Very much, Erica. You're right. This is something so important that making the bad choice could derail the whole process. You're right. So next in the queue is Alan Greenberg. You have your hand. But you were next. Yeah.
It's very much a follow up on what Eric has said. I am definitely not a supporter of getting too much of our energy focused in Workstream 1 on jurisdiction. And yet, I don't think the simple pushing the ball back to Workstream 2 position is sufficient for our group. I don't think we can only say to in our reports that it's going to be Workstream 2, so you don't have to worry about this. That would be a worrisome answer because then the next question would be, but come on, how are you going to address this? Does that mean that once the transition happens, then ICANN was going to move right away like this? It would certainly not be acceptable. And that is why I think we need to spend a little bit of time about how our group is planning to address this issue, and that's why I'm very much in favor of being requirement-based, as was said earlier. So it is, I think, our role now to say whether we have identified gaps between the ideal jurisdiction context in terms of accountability. I'm saying ideal in terms of not another one, but what would be the perfect jurisdiction context? For instance, that would enable a community to have final say or whatever, just to take Pedro's example. And if we are seeing any gaps with the existing context, at least that would ensure that there is a common understanding of what are the requirements and whether the situation is felt to be, I mean, if we are 95% of requirements filled, obviously the situation is not the same as if we have a lot of gaps identified. And I'm confident there's not so many gaps, and the requirements we've gathered so far show that there's not so many gaps out there. But I don't think we can provide a fully satisfactory answer to that question for everyone, but at least we need to demonstrate we're taking this seriously and in a non-political manner, meaning based on requirements and with the intent to enhance ICANN's accountability, which is our mandate. That's why I think it's worth taking a little bit of time highlighting whether there are gaps identified or whether what the key requirements for us are in terms of choosing of the ideal jurisdiction for ICANN. And I think that's in line with Pedro's input. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matthew. And yes, I mean, we're not supposed to decide on this in this meeting, of course, but I like what you put on the mailing list, Pedro, with regards to requirements as to maybe not having set the jurisdiction for only the U.S., but rather have an open clause that would allow at any time to have this jurisdiction change instead to some other territory, so long as that territory complies with certain requirements. That is what we need to iron out now between the working groups. So the document that is now displayed is its purpose is for all of us to fill in those requirements that we might consider, of course, as essential for accomplishing an adequate addressing of this issue. So next on line, I have Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. I'm hearing a lot of the same things repeated in different words. It's quite clear, you know, it's fine to say this is we shouldn't treat it politically, but this is a political issue for many people. I have heard, you know, people say we must be headquartered in Geneva, and other ones say we must not be headquartered in Geneva. We're not going to satisfy everybody. That's quite clear. We have been hearing for eternity in ICANN, according to California law, XXX, I suspect personally, and I'm not a lawyer, that one can change the lead into that sentence to be almost anyone's law, and there's going to be a lot of similarities. So just because it's true under California law does not mean it's not true under someone else's law. We are not the jurisdiction CCWG, we're the accountability CCWG. We need to focus on accountability issues. If we find deficiencies in California law or in Swiss law or in whatever, then we have to act on it. But let's act on some facts to begin with. There may be some political decisions that are made later on. That doesn't need to be our focus. So I think we need to find out what the issues are to satisfy our accountability needs. If they can be satisfied within California law, then it's as good to stay there for the moment as you know. I would think that's a reasonable choice if we're trying to minimize change, and try to put together a brief so that if we have to make a political decision later, we can. You know, clearly we don't want to move to a country where, you know, companies are nationalized on a regular basis. That violates the control by government issue. We have a simple job to do on a relative scale here. Let's focus on that and make use of our legal counsel we've retained to make sure we can go forward sometime in the future if we need to.
Good. Thank you, Alan. Next in the queue is Kid Drazik.
Okay. Thank you, Leon. So Keith Drazik for the transcript. I forwarded an email to the list just a few minutes ago, which was a follow-on, or basically it was an email exchange that we had on our list back on March 5th on this issue of jurisdiction, where I noted that Fadi, during his testimony before the Senate committee on February 25th, actually went out of his way to tell the senators that he expected the affirmation of commitments, obligations, including the jurisdictional issue, to be incorporated into the bylaws coming out of this process. So he has set an expectation in the U.S. Congress that that will be done. So while I agree that changing ICANN's jurisdiction is not a Workstream 1 issue, and perhaps could be considered in Workstream 2 at some point in the future, I'm concerned that Fadi has actually set an expectation that it is a Workstream 1 issue for the community, and that because we are the group tasked with coming up with the bylaw red line or amendments to the bylaws, that the U.S. Congress is now going to be expecting that we are to do that. And so I just want to put a note out there that this is, while we may want to push this issue off, we may not be able to, based on the comments that Fadi made. And I noted in my email that, you know, this was not sort of just an off-the-cuff comment that he made in response to a question. This was actually part of his prepared testimony that was actually in response to the letter that the senators had sent to Steve Crocker last July. So I think it was actually intentional, and that it's something that we can't lose sight of. It complicates our work, but I think with that expectation set, we can't lose sight of that. Thanks.
Much, Keith. I see. Chris, do you have an immediate reaction to that?
Just for clarity, because it's all about nuance, what Fadi actually said was there are no plans to change currently. There are no plans for changing the jurisdiction. That's not actually the same thing. And so I think it's really important. You could equally argue, or I could if I spent 5 minutes thinking about it, argue that his statement was a clear statement that we shouldn't be looking at plans to change in Workstream 1, because he said there are no plans to change. So I think it's really important we don't try and read too much or for that matter too little into sentences that people say in front of the Senate or in front of any other body. He did not say he thinks that ICANN should remain in the U.S., which I think is about the only statement clear statement you could use to suggest that we should be working on it. Thanks.
Probably Keith can answer, but let's not fall in the trap of discussing other people not in the room's declarations. But the fact is, and I can testify because every time I engage with people outside of this group, among the top three questions I get is jurisdiction. So, I mean, whether it's in our scope or not, this is expected for many reasons. So we at least need to explain how we are addressing this. I think this is not necessarily something we write in the report as a recommendation from the group, but at least we need to be able, and I mean, as a co-chair, I engage outside, and I think that's part of our role as co-chairs, and if you say to us, well, do what you wish, answer as you wish, but I think it's too important an issue to not be discussed together so that we sort of have a common view of how we respond to this kind of questions, because it's been an approach that's been discussed within the group.
And much, Matthew. Keith, do you want to react to that?
Yeah, thank you. Just briefly. Yes, Chris, Fadi did say that there were no plans to change, but he then went on to say that there was an expectation that the affirmation of commitments, obligations, including the jurisdictional issue, would be incorporated into the bylaws. So you're right in that those were the words he used, but he actually went further.
Thanks, Keith. I'm mindful of the time, so I will be closing the queue now on Thomas Rickett. Next person on the queue is Paul Rosenzweig.
Yes, I would, Paul Rosenzweig, for the record, I would simply add that the reason jurisdiction is at least partially relevant to our work in Workstream 1
is that maintaining ICANN in California may, as a matter of law, and in fact, as I read Sidley, is likely to exclude certain structures that are at least still on the table in Jordan's structural analysis. The European Supervisory Board model, for example, is probably, and I'll let the lawyer speak to, but is probably not a lawful structure under California law. And so the jurisdictional decision necessarily brings with it implications about permissible community oversight structures, and that may be okay. We may not like the supervisory board structure for other reasons, but if the consensus were that that was the one structure we wanted, we would have to move to a jurisdiction that permitted that. And so while I certainly agree that the political choices of moving jurisdiction should not be discussed to the maximum extent possible in this group, and I also think I agree with Keith that to some degree a decision on that has been preempted by the CEO, nonetheless, we have to recognize that it restrains us in a great degree in, well, not a great degree, but to some degree in the choices we are free to make.
Thank you, Paul. Next in the queue is Sébastien Bachelet.
Sébastien Bachelet for the record. Thank you, Leon. I want to remind you that there were studies made by ICANN bodies about this subject, and it's important to take that into account, to not to say that we need to agree with the conclusion of those groups, but the first one was a study done by the President's Strategy Committee under Paul Toomey's tenure, and we have people quite close who were members of this group. I just take two of them, Jean-Jacques Subrana and Marlene Cade. That could be useful. The second, I guess that staff takes this issue, this discussion again before the opening of the office in Geneva. And I think one question who is not on the table or in the discussion now, it's not too much the fact that there are Swiss law, but in Swiss there are specific law for international organization who are not Swiss law as such, and it's why there are so much international organization based in Zurich or in Geneva. It's because they have some specific, I will call that extraterritorial laws, and it's maybe what we would like to look for, knowing that we are talking here about international organization and we are not an international organization or a treaty organization. And we may need, but that's not even World Stream 2, it may be World Stream 3, to find a specific extraterritoriality law for a multi-stakeholder organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Next on the queue, I see Avri Doria. Avri.
Thank you. Avri speaking, and good morning. I think a couple things on this. First of all, we need to look at this from the perspective of accountability, not just where the legal home is, and take that as a whole package. I think what Fadi says is interesting, but it doesn't really count, because the decision really is up to this group and then going further as to what we want to do about accountability. And while I doubt it is necessary to move to achieve accountability, if we were to decide that that was absolutely necessary, then that's something that we would just have to deal with. I think what the Congress says is interesting, and it's enough to cause fear and loathing, but it's not something that should govern what we come out with. Whether they have anything to say about this or not is an open question. They certainly get to say a lot, but at the end of the day, if it's their decision or not, is A, not our problem, and B, not even determined. So I think that we have to do whatever it is that we think is right. Now, I tend to believe that staying in California is probably as good as any of the other alternatives, but that's something that we need to determine, not do it because Fadi said it, or not do it because the U.S. Congress will be mad at us. And incorporating the AOC into this, into the bylaws, there's a lot to incorporate about the AOC, and you know, part of my role here is to represent that. I do not know that that also means we need to include the clause. And in fact, I'm not even sure how much sense it makes to include a clause in bylaws of a corporation saying you will stay in that home, in that juridical home. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily follow that putting all of the AOC commitments into accountability, transparency, and all the other reviews necessarily includes domicile in California. Thanks. And, of course, I'm not a lawyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Avery. Next on the queue is, Erica Mann. Is that an old hand? That's an old man? An old hand? Okay, so that next in queue is Tijani. Yeah, or is that an Alhan too? Okay. So next in the queue would be James Bledel.
Hi, thanks. James speaking. I'll just be brief because I know there's a long queue and people have beaten us to death. So, I'm just concerned that we're getting into a bit of a and perhaps even a dangerous side tangent here that, it's sort of a grass is greener approach to jurisdiction. I feel that whatever problems or limitations, we need to identify them as part of this legal team's exercise. And if they are something that needs to be solved for California jurisdiction, let's solve them there. And then that, I think, will help us, inform us for future work in Workstream 2, but I think that's the task in front of us for Workstream 1, and that gets us to the point where we're out of the political firestorm, perhaps, or at least into a calmer waters, and then we can proceed on this issue from a better standing point. I think trying to tackle those issues right out of the gate is, I'll just say it, it's dangerous. It brings the kind of attention to this work that that we don't want.
Thanks, James. Next on the queue, I have Rulof Meyer.
Thank you, Rulof Meyer. Yeah, very much what James said. What I'm missing also is what are the real questions that we're trying to answer? Something like, does Californian law limit the enhancement of ICANN's accountability to a level that we find unacceptable, or is there another jurisdiction that would increase ICANN's accountability to the level that we want? Because I think immediately if I read this paper, we're diving into details before we actually have answered the question, why are we looking into this subject, other than a lot of people are telling us that we should. But the overall question, and I have my answer, but I would be interested to get the answer from the room, is do we really think that it is realistic to expect that if we propose that the jurisdiction should be changed during the transition or before it or immediately afterward, that this will actually happen? Am I the only one who thinks that's foolish to assume that? So why are we spending time on this subject then? Because one thing I think we all agree on is that we are short on time. We're not short on items to discuss at length and in depth, but we're short of time.
Okay, next agenda item. No, I have next. Thank you very much, Rulof. I have next on the queue, Chris Despain.
Why are you ignoring me?
Because you are... Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're next.
I think this is, again, this is very delicate. I think the choice of words is decisive whether we're going to wake sleeping dogs or give raise to suspicion with those that are going to look at our proposal. So I think being vague about what we're doing and what we're not doing is dangerous, right? So but I think that ultimately, looking at what we're chartered with, it's accountability. It's not finding a better place for ICANN. I do not buy the concept of, you know, moving it elsewhere will solve any problem. It will cause an awful lot of additional problems during this transition, right? So it's not easily be taken. But I guess that, you know, the level of detail, as Rulof said, in this document is far too great. I think we need to simplify the message, and I think, you know, one suggestion, for example, that I've been making in the GNSO Council for years is that ICANN should be looking at offering contracts by governed by legal systems other than U.S. law. I think it's outrageous for a European company to ask ICANN for permission to abide by European data protection laws, right? And to ask for a waiver not to be forced to do data retention. And I think it's these practical matters that people might really be interested in. So, you know, I'm not a native speaker. I don't claim that this question is phrased perfectly, but I hope that you get the idea. Maybe we could simply state that in workstream number one, we ask the following question. Can ICANN's accountability to its stakeholders be improved depending on the law applicable to its actions? Right? So we're looking at the contract, the law governing ICANN's contractual relationships, but also if ICANN does something wrong and people are seeking legal remedy against that, then we might say, okay, governing law is the law of whatever, so that people actually have an anchor, a tool to challenge ICANN either in arbitration or in courts that might be subject to other legal system than the U.S. Or Californian law. I think that would be concrete enough to address the concern that many of us share. And at the same time, if the U.S. government reads it, then we're saying, well, we're not desperate to move it elsewhere, but that we're actually focused on what ICANN is doing and not where ICANN is currently sitting.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Well, the queue was closed, but we still have some time. We still have 5 minutes, and we have two new hands, as I assume. Let me go through this. Chris' hand, is that an old hand? Or
no, that's a brand spanking new hand.
Okay, well then, you're next.
Thank you. And if Erica would like to jump the queue to come straight after me, that would be fine. So, at the political level, the international political level, there is a desire on behalf of a number of countries, I don't know whether it's a majority or not, but there is a desire that in the future ICANN doesn't move out of California, it moves out of the US. You might be able to solve some of the Californian law difficulties by moving ICANN from California to Delaware, for example, but that's not going to solve the political problem. So let's put that as a high-level political problem. And I think Pedro is basically saying that's a Workstream 2 issue. In order for it to be a Workstream 2 issue, in order for it to be in Workstream 2, it's not exactly helpful to it if in Workstream 1, the result is that ICANN's jurisdiction is cemented, at the end of the day, is cemented in California. It doesn't mean you can't overturn it in the long term, but in the short term it would be hard. So Jordan's typed a question into the chat, which is basically, isn't the question, can we get through the transition without having to cement ICANN's jurisdiction in California / the U.S.? So that's actually a tactical question, a strategic question. So if I go, I'm going to sew this together in a second. So Thomas, to go to your question, I think I agree with you that we need to get really, really focused on what it is that we ask. I think your question is a little bit needs a little bit of refinement. You said something about the law applicable to its actions. I'd actually rather turn it on its head and ask the question: is it possible that ICANN can use different jurisdictions to govern different contracts or different aspects of its work? Because that's a positive rather than a negative, and you'll get a better response from lawyers to that question, I think, than you will to the other one. But that's something we can work on. So that then brings us to the final point, is if we all agree, and I think we do, that we can't move the jurisdiction as part of this, even if we wanted to, the question becomes, how can we strategically do this so that the resulting transition plan is acceptable to Congress, but does not say the clause about ICANN's jurisdiction goes into the bylaws? That's really what we need to answer, and that's not necessarily a question to be bounced around in this big room. It may be a question for a small team of people to go away and think about. But one way of dealing with it would be, and it's a risk, but one way of dealing with it would be to, instead of moving the affirmation of commitment holus bolus into the
bylaws and excluding the jurisdictional clause actually goes through the affirmation of committee. I'm sure there'll be other things in the AOC that aren't applicable to the bylaws. So all we need to do is to choose the ones that we want to move into the bylaws. Instead of referring them to as affirmation of commitment, refer to them as the bits of it. But it's a risk. At the end of the day, let's be clear, there is a risk here that Congress will say to any transition plan that doesn't cement US jurisdiction that it's not acceptable. But we have to take that risk anyway and deal with it if it happens. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. Next on the queue, I see Alan's hand is up. Is that an old hand or a new hand?
You can't change the order of the queue by not having an old hand, so it's a new hand.
It's a new hand? Okay. So, please, Alan.
A couple of things. I've signed a fair number of contracts in my day, and many governments at various locals will only sign contracts in their own jurisdiction, and the companies dealing business with them somehow manage. So, yes, we can sign contracts in whatever jurisdiction, understanding that our cost to us may be higher, you know, if there is litigation. That's a cost to business. It's a pure business decision. It's nothing else. That one should be off our scope altogether. I find it a little bit humorous to be talking about the concept of putting in our bylaws that we will remain a California corporation. A California corporation implicitly remains a California corporation. If we move to Geneva or to Montreal or to Australia, we're a new corporation with a new set of bylaws. Now, that might be skirting around the intent, but let's face it, the words that are spoken were completely true. Maybe not the intent or what people read into them. So just for a little bit of humor here, I think we know where we have to go. I'm not sure we need a lot more discussion on this item, but I'll leave it up to the co-chairs.
Thanks, Alan. Thank you. Next on the queue, I have Malcolm Huddy.
Thank you. I would like to suggest that the question of where ICANN is headquartered, for its own sake as a question or for reasons of pride or concern about a distrust in the United States or any of those sorts of reasons, is outside our scope of this group. We are here to come up with specific recommendations for improving ICANN's accountability. And in this WS1 work, we are here to come up with those that must be put in place before transition. So changing the jurisdiction is not intrinsically related to that, but it might be consequentially. So if we discover, on the basis of the advice that we receive, that some of the measures that we are minded to propose cannot be implemented while we are headquartered in California, then it is relevant to identify that as a problem. And it is relevant to say, to express a view as to whether we consider this to be sufficiently important that it need delay transition. That is within our scope. So for my own, to give an example, in my own view, while I would expect that this is entirely surmountable, if it were to turn out that the IRP process cannot be made binding on ICANN while ICANN is headquartered in California, then I would support at that point moving from California in preference to abandoning making the proposal to make the IRP process binding. But that places this question then as a consequential question and not as a primary question. As a primary question, I think we should rule it out of scope. The only final comment I would make is that moving out of California doesn't necessarily mean moving out of the United States. Reincorporating in, I don't know,
Delaware,
for example, would be an option that one might wish to consider in those circumstances that might satisfy the U.S. Congress, while at the same time resolving an identified issue with the specific nature of California. That's a possibility that we might wish to consider at the time if we need to. But I would say that we should only consider these in relation to specific recommendations that we are making as within our scope. So, Thomas, I would support your proposal that we should be specific, that we should not consider this in the abstract, but I think we need to be more specific than you proposed.
Thank you very much, Malcolm. Next on the queue, I have Jordan Carden, then Arun Sukumar. And I don't know, Rulof, is that an old hand or it's a new one? Okay. So we're closing the queue with Rulof. And next on the line is Jordan Carter. Please, Jordan.
Thanks. Jordan here. The issue of jurisdiction, the kind of political dimension of it, I'm not sure it's in scope here. I think that that is in scope of the CWG in a way. And I think the only thing I'd say about that is that if the United States thinks it can say we're going to transition internet governance to a multi-stakeholder community and then isn't going to accept the multi-stakeholder community's needs about how that looks, it's on a hiding to nothing. But that's not our problem. The specifics that Thomas mentioned in terms of contractual stuff, I don't think that's an accountability issue either. I think it's a quality of ICANN's operation issue. And I'm not sure it's in scope for us either. The third point is the one that Malcolm made. If we can't give the community the powers that we need in the California jurisdiction, then we have to challenge the community to say, this is the set we can do. These are the things you've said that are important that we can't do. Are they important enough to try and move jurisdiction? So that's the bit that's central to our work. And balancing those up is important. I haven't seen anything so far that suggests we're going to get to having to ask that question. But I think that in the jurisdiction discussion in this group at this time for Workstream 1, that's the bit we should focus on. Can we implement our powers or not?
Thank you very much, Jordan. Next in line is Arun Sukumar.
Thank you, John. I think jurisdiction is important in the context of. I agree that there's no productive discussion to be had in simply discussing whether the ICANN should be moved to another home or not. But if you're looking for the if you're looking in the context of accountability from the transition to the from NTI oversight to that of a multi-stakeholder body, jurisdiction is important in that. Are you discussing whether ICANN is accountable to this multi-stakeholder body and the constituents it represents? So maybe perhaps one way to look at it is not whether ICANN should be moved to another jurisdiction or not, but whether the constituent documents, for instance, the affirmation of commitments, is a document that has been discussed primarily with the United States government and ICANN. Other stakeholders, especially those from the international community, were not involved in that discussion. How can we potentially look at how those principles enshrined in the affirmation of commitments are made accountable to a larger jurisdiction or a larger constituency? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Next in line, I have Rolf Meyer, and with that, we'll close the discussion and we'll recap.
Thank you, Rolf Meyer. I'm not sure if I understood you correctly, Thomas, but I got the impression that if we would look at it from the perspective as you phrase it, that would force us to have to look at every jurisdiction in the world to see if it was better. In line with what Jordan said, I would propose that we consider this, and maybe that's also a way to communicate it, that it's out of scope for this working group unless we find that the existing jurisdiction prevents us from obtaining our goals. Then we would have to look at it. But I would suggest that we consider this to be out of scope unless we see that this is an obstacle. We can't reach what we intend to reach.
Very much, Rolf. Yes, Thomas?
I've opened up my statement saying that the language might not be perfect. I guess that there's a lot of traction for the notion behind it, right? I think we need to try to find the right set of words to describe this.
So, doing a small recap on this, we can so far conclude that we agree that nothing is to be decided on Workstream 1 with regards to jurisdiction, and we will only be open in the scope of this issue if we find that a requirement cannot be taken or implemented under California law. That would be one of the conclusions. And we need to rephrase the problem as a statement for Workstream 2. And we will work on Thomas' question along with what Chris Despain added, and then we can have a better wording for this issue in order to address it on Workstream 2. Okay, so next point in our agenda, I'd like to turn to Matthew.
Yeah, it's a nice transition into the no pun intended. Can I ask Steve to join us for the next item of discussion, which was actually the way we are incorporating the affirmation of commitment into the bylaws, which was one of our Workstream 1 items we identified in Frankfurt. And just as an introduction reminder that we've already been discussing some items of the affirmation of commitment to be reincorporated into the mission and commitments and values. So we've discussed this. So this is more focused on the review system that is at the core of the affirmation of commitment and how it can be translated into our into the bylaws. The Frankfurt outcome was that we wanted this to be part of the bylaws, plus the ability to sunset or sunrise, sunset existing reviews or sunrise new ones, I think. And there was a question also about the level of binding, how binding the recommendations from a review team could be. And of course, there's also a small issue of who appoints members of the review teams once the NTIA is no longer in this, because Larry Strickling, the NTIA, is currently one of the appointing in some of them, or at least part of the review team, something like this. Well, there's a question around this. And Steve will be...
the chair of the GAC, the board, that generally speaking appoint the people.
Right. Well, okay. Steve, can you recap the very strong work that's been done so far on this?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Adam, I think you're going to try to load the one which I linked to there. Thank you very much. And I just pasted a link to the PDF in the chat as well. This is about affirmation of commitments reviews, because those reviews were deemed to be important as about the only way the community has been able to hold the corporation accountable and have recommendations that the corporation had to implement. And I'm talking in this case about the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, the infamous ATRT, of which there have been two, Security, Stability, and Resiliency Review, one has been done, a pending review on the new GTLD expansion, where we look at the evaluation of the application process, as well as whether the new GTLDs have promoted consumer trust, consumer choice, and competition, and then finally the WHOIS review. So the AOC, written in 2009, is a bilateral agreement between ICANN and one other party, one other government, the U.S. government. It contains a slew of commitments from the U.S. government to support the ICANN model, but it also supports commitments that ICANN is making to the global and public interest, not commitments specifically to the U.S., although it is a bilateral agreement. There's wide recognition that that document becomes the next target in trying to eliminate any kind of unique role for any one government in the management of the DNS. So having gotten rid of the IANA contract just clears the way to focus on the next unique document, which is the affirmation. So there's a widespread understanding that the affirmation is probably something we ought to work into the bylaws to the extent that that's applicable, and we ought to do it as part of the transition. There's another reason. As Matthew indicated, stress test number 14 looked at the fact that the IANA contract itself provides a powerful incentive for ICANN to remain in the affirmation of commitments, because after all, the affirmation does obligate ICANN to some pretty significant undertakings when it comes to these reviews. Would ICANN prefer to cancel the affirmation of commitments? Well, board members have told me they would love to get out of it. But that's really neither here nor there. Let's just look into the future and say, could it happen? Yes. The affirmation of commitments is cancelable with 120 days notice by either party. And because it's cancelable, stress test 14 suggested that as a result of the transition, there would no longer be the leverage of the IANA contract to keep ICANN in the affirmation of commitments. So that is one of the reasons that to the extent we want to retain the commitments in the affirmation, we ought to bake them into the bylaws. And then the third reason is what we've just discussed for most of the last hour, which is that at a hearing on February the 25th, the ICANN CEO declared that the affirmation would be brought into the bylaws. You know, but without getting into the specificity of every paragraph, that ends up framing an expectation. It isn't itself a commitment as much as it it sets up an expectation. So there are two aspects to this. The first was there are four specific paragraphs in the affirmation of commitments where ICANN makes commitments that are candidates to be brought into the bylaws. Those are paragraphs 3, 4, 7, and 8. Now, Matthew Shears on Work Party 1 did a good deal of work on that, and several of us reviewed it on Work Party 1 phone call, and that was folded into some of the work that Becky Burr was talking about yesterday morning, where, if you recall, the very first document Becky put up, the right-hand column was the affirmation of commitments, and there were three or four sentences that were brought into what? To the core values section. Not, by the way, paragraph 8 in the section of U.S. jurisdiction. That wasn't part of that combination that Becky did yesterday morning. The second aspect of this is the reviews. And the reviews are all part of paragraph 9. And for this work, Fiona Songa, Matthew Shears, and I drafted up all four of the reviews in language that would fit into the bylaws. And we did so in a way that made four improvements that were documented by the community over the past several months in the comments that came back on accountability. One was the ability to sunset old reviews and create new ones. Another was that the community would appoint the review team members instead of the chair of the GAC and chair of the board. The third is that we would enhance obligations on the part of ICANN to actually implement the recommendations that the community comes up with in a review team. And finally, that there be transparency and better access to internal documents if the review teams needed to have access to it. So the easiest way I can walk through this document is to have you scroll to the section where the first review is discussed, and it's on page 4 of the document in the chat, page 4. So the language here would suggest that in section 5, there's already a periodic review of ICANN execution key commitments, because in the articles today, under Article 4 of the bylaws, we would add a new section 5, and I picked that section just because that's where the structural reviews are committed to by ICANN. First one is the ATRT. So the language here is imported very closely from the language that's in the affirmation. And Fiona Asonga put this document together initially. If you wish to see the actual text of the four affirmation reviews, you can simply control your own scroll. They're in the first three pages of this document. So the board shall cause a periodic review of their commitment to maintain and improve robust mechanisms for public input accountability. So what you'll notice is that the affirmation reviews contain commitments in the first sentence of each review. One of the things we need to do is to be sure that if those commitments live in the review, should they also live in the core values section? So Becky, that may be an area we need to double check. There are sentences that lead off each of the four reviews that may have extra phrases that weren't in the core values yesterday. They seem entirely consistent, right? Robust mechanisms for public input, accountability, transparency, public interest, and accountable to all stakeholders. I think we're pretty close on that one. The next section there lists A through F, and that's verbatim, other than the comment from Cavus, that's verbatim from what's in the affirmation today. Work Party 1, during one of the sessions where we read through, Cavus had asked that we not necessarily import from the affirmation this notion of evaluating the effectiveness of the GAC. And it was a fair point. It was a fair point. Item B on the screen was to assess the role and effectiveness of the GAC. So our work party wanted to bring this to the attention of the entire CCWG, but it was a suggestion that Cavus made, that evaluating the effectiveness of the GAC may not exactly be what the Accountability and Transparency Review Team should look at. The role of the GAC, for sure, but maybe not the effectiveness. And then he asked whether, Jordan had asked, whether other structural reviews look at effectiveness. And they don't entirely, but the word effective shows up in the structural review of the GNSO to ask whether it's being used effectively for the purposes, that the structure is effective for the purpose of the GNO. The next thing we did on here was to evaluate the review team can recommend termination of other periodic reviews as required by this section. This section being what? The four reviews that we're bringing in. This is the notion of giving the ATRT the opportunity to sunset, say, the WHOIS review 2 or 3 years from now, or to create a brand new review, a new review of whether ICANN is adequately diverse and reflecting the needs of a growing global economy of Internet users. The review would be conducted by a volunteer community review team. That's identical to the affirmation. And it lists advisory committees, supporting organizations. We added stakeholder groups and the chair of the board. This particular one has the chair of the board on it. That's from the affirmation. We added the notion that the review team may, not must, but may also solicit and select independent experts, not management, but the review team could, to render advice as requested by the review team, and that the review team could choose to accept it. So it's not something that would be a top-down imposition, but an option. This paragraph that's here next talks about transparency and openness. So to facilitate transparency and openness, the review team should have access to ICANN's internal documents and the output published for public comment. That's in the affirmation today. We thought that it would be important that they would take care on any documents that it would review that were confidential, and that the review team would publish for public comment and then produce final recommendations to the board. Currently, it says the board shall take action. We all felt that that was a bit vague. What does take action really mean? And so we are considering the phrase, instead of take action, to say, quote, consider approval and begin implementation. Consider approval and begin implementation within 6 months of receipt. The 6 months comes from the affirmation as well. This particular review right now is supposed to happen every 3 years, the ATRT. There's already been two of them. There's another one coming up in 2015. So the ATRT looks at every 3 years, and we had did our best to try to rationalize this and space them out a bit more. So you can see that our proposal here, our draft, is to say every 5 years. And you would measure that from the date that the board received the final report of the review team. So, Matthew, I assume that if I go through the next three, it could go quite briskly because, in many respects, the changes and improvements we made are the same. Would that be all right? And what's our timing on this? Till 10:55?
Yeah.
Great. With commentary. All right, the next review is the SSR, or Preserving Security, Stability, and Resiliency. This is a review that's required every 3 years. One of them has been done. We also suggested that it go to 5 years. So there's a commitment in here, the execution of ICANN's commitment to enhance the operational stability, reliability, resiliency, security, and global interoperability. Becky, I believe those were in the core values that you discussed yesterday. They might have even been in the mission statement part. So this commitment is already locked into the discussion we had yesterday. The question is, how do we measure ICANN's achievement of that commitment? That's what this review would do. The rest of this language is imported from the affirmation, plus the notion of letting the community select who's on the review team, letting the community pick the advice of outside experts. The review team would not disclose or distribute any ICANN internal documents under a legitimate duty of confidence. We're trying to satisfy the urge that when documents are requested, that ICANN not be able to claim you can't have them because they're confidential. We need to have a way of bridging that gap. And Ed Morris, you're here today as well. When we get to the Q&A, I do want you to try to get in the queue and describe the challenges that you were able to document on getting access to the documents necessary to do a review as well. All right, and again, the same notion of publishing for comment and take action. No, not take action, but consider approval and implementation. In our draft, we suggested this be done every 5 years instead of every 3 years. All right, two more, and then we'll get to Q&A. This next one is the review that we haven't performed yet. It's the review of the new GTLD expansion. In 2009, we were still, 3 years before opening up bids for the new GTLD program, so the 2009 affirmation has phrases in it such as, if and when ICANN expands the new GTLD space, it would move on. So we took that out and suggested that as it expands the space, and there's an anticipation that we're not done yet, there could be an ongoing evergreen round of applications, or there might well be another round, or it could be some combination of a permanent expansion round. So let's just write the words generally, that as it expands the TLD space, that it will adequately address competition, consumer protection, security, stability, resiliency, malicious abuse, and all of these words are taken from the affirmation of commitments. So probably we'll have a lively debate about whether all those commitments are likely to be here and not reflected in the core values. I think anything that's in here we're going to evaluate against, it probably ought to be in the core values. The affirmation calls for this review to occur 1 year after
new GTLDs have been in operation. Everybody debates what operation means, but it's delegation or contract or public availability. The affirmation then requires another review 2 years later, and then reviews no fewer than every 4 years. That's what's in the affirmation of commitments. And since this is a review we haven't begun yet, there's a lot of work that's been done. Jonathan Zook had chaired a working group. Cheryl was on it as well, where we came up with metrics that could be used to measure the effectiveness of the new GTLD program on promoting consumer trust. So that should help as well. The rest of this is verbatim from the affirmation, plus this notion of transparency to documents, the fact that the community selects the members within 6 months. And then in yellow, I have highlighted a comment that in our work party discussions, Cavus had proposed adding that subsequent rounds not be opened until recommendations of the previous review required were implemented. And that sounds sensible, but we would welcome input from the group on that. So the group itself, we came up with the draft to suggest here that the periodic reviews should be no less frequently than every 4 years. Notion there is that we're going to do one under the current affirmation of commitments that's going to begin this year. It'll begin before the transition is over. So that one will be in the bag. And then the notion here is that every 4 years after this review is done, there'd be a review of the ongoing new GTLD expansion, as opposed to one a year out, another one 2 years out, and then every 4 years. So we're trying to rationalize it and make it a little bit simpler. All right, the final one in here is the review of who is. And this is part of the extent to which its implementation meets the legitimate needs of law enforcement and promotes consumer trust. So that's not a line of commitment. That's a line of what the review is supposed to look at, because however it got here, who is a current obligation of ICANN, and as such, the affirmation sought to evaluate whether it's being faithfully enforced and applied. There is a commitment line in the second sentence of the affirmation there. ICANN commits to enforcing existing policies subject to applicable laws. And that's always been a phrase that, for the most part, look to compromise. If applicable law protects privacy, then that is why certain registrars don't have to enforce all of the WHOIS under the new RAA. It does expect and mention the legitimate needs of law enforcement and promote consumer trust. Becky, did the law enforcement line make it into the draft we looked at yesterday with respect to core values? I don't think it did. It was discussed on Sunday afternoon, so I recall.
But we did talk about the fact that the specification one specifically addresses WHOIS issues.
Got it. And specification one from the registry agreement and registrar agreements is incorporated up under the first section of the core values that we came up with yesterday. Okay, again, there's the notion that we appoint the review team members. We have access to documents. Board shall take action. And we're suggesting no less frequently than every 3 years. Now, if we're going to replace WHOIS with a new directory services in the next few years, if we're fortunate enough to do something like that, right, Avery? I wanted to point out that we baked into the ATRT proposal here is that the ATRT, the first team, could recommend the sunset of a review that's no longer applicable, or the modification of the review if we have to change the name of the system. The word WHOIS may not even be applicable in 5 years. There's a line in yellow on there that both Robin Gross and Bruce Tonkin had suggested on our call that there be an addition to this on OECD privacy principles as part of the criteria to the review. That wasn't in the affirmation. It was offered for suggestion. So with that, Matthew, happy to have you manage a queue.
Yeah, sure. So just before we get into the discussions, a couple of points. Let's not get into the precise wording at this stage. What we're looking at is the main requirements around this review system, and we need to build agreement on that way before we get into the actual drafting. So that's the first thing. And so I just would like to encourage everyone to discuss about the features that have been highlighted by Steve around the 5-year, 4-year, 3-year periods, about the sitting of the review teams by the community, about the enhancing of the disclosure processes, the way the board would only be tasked to consider implementation. Those are the items we need to make sure we have some agreement on, and maybe a few others that have been touched on or not touched on can be relevant here. But I think my warning is, let's not get into drafting details, but please keep at the feature requirement level. And with that, I turn to Avery, who was kicked off the queue unfairly.
Thank you. As opposed to fairly, right. Thank you. Avery speaking. First, let me explain my giggle about things happening in the next year. I, as an IETF participant who's worked on protocols, I've never seen a new protocol implemented quicker than a decade, implemented and deployed. So that's the giggle, not a policy giggle. Okay. In terms of this, I tried to get some comments in on this, but by the time I found out where the work was being done, my comments, I guess, got there too late to be included. I have some editorials. I won't get into those. I wanted to explain one thing on the issue that Cavus brought up about effectiveness.
We'll go up to that one.
Right. What they meant by effectiveness and came out in the discussions was not whether the GAC was an effective organization, but whether the GAC provided an effective voice for governments within the ICANN system. So perhaps we need to word that differently to make it not look like we're criticizing the GAC and its effectiveness as an organization, but really what it really meant, is it being an effective vehicle for governments? So I just wanted to get that one. The other thing I wanted to actually suggest was a fifth thing to list under it. And this is not something that is in the AOC itself, but it's something that has been developed by the ATRT over time, and that's the requirements for annual reports on the implementation of accountability and transparency and the state of accountability and transparency. So this is something that came out of the ATRT too, but it's something that if the AOC commitments are going into the bylaws, I would recommend that we, and I had written up some text that could be included, and I'll just read it quickly. So it's, you know, ICANN will be responsible for creating an annual report that details the status of implementation on all reviews defined in this section. This annual review implementation report will be open for public review and comment period that will be considered by the ICANN board, et cetera. So I basically would like to, and I've sent the text to the list, but I would like to recommend that be added to the list of changes to be made. Thanks.
Aubrey, this is Steve. My apologies for missing the March 20th email you sent over. I found it now. Thank you. And I'll take your
the last minute, but it took me a while to find out where you guys were working and where the text was.
Yeah, quite all right. And I will need to get the phrase that we need to show Cavus so that the effectiveness is whether it's effective for governments, which is, I think, what you're getting at. We'll look for a phrase on that, and I'll look for your annual report text as well. Thank you.
Thanks. Very useful contribution. Sebastian, you are next on the line.
A useful contribution. I agree with Avery about the GAC. I think what it's important for me is each part of this organization must be on, I will say, equal footing. And there is no reason to see that the end user are working well or not well, and the government can work well or not well. We need to have for everybody to see how they participate to the overall structure. Select by the community, it is already the case, except that at the end there are two people who are balancing the selection, but the people proposed by are proposed by the community, by SO and AC and so on, to be member of this group. And I think it's important to find a way, because it's at the end the only thing that they were really doing, it's to have a diversity issue taking into account. And if it's done by the community, which it's already the case, what it's important at the end is that we are sure about a lot of diversity items within this group. It's maybe too much a detail, but you talk, Steve, about maybe not having any new round, and at the end of the first paragraph, the review must be taken after any round. And there is some contradiction between what you say and what is written here. Thank you.
Constructive.
Thank you very much.
I think that if I was to rephrase your point on the selection, it would be something around the community selects, and then there's the two existing or others that could ask for reconsideration if the diversity criteria are not met or something like this, right? That's your idea. For consideration, not for approval at this point, obviously. But I'm just wanting to make sure we have your point correct.
Right, and the drafters were solidly behind the notion of not wanting to get approval for the chair of the board of the organization that we're about to review.
Yeah.
And so we're uncomfortable with that, but I understand the need for diversity.
That's one of the discussion points we need to have, but I wanted to phrase that correctly, ensure we have this captured. Next in line is Chris Despain.
Thank you,
ladies and gentlemen.
This is sort of meta concern. I just want to make sure that we make sure that everybody knows what we're doing here. I don't mean everybody in this group. I mean everybody in the community. I'm slightly concerned. I know there's no intention, but I'm slightly concerned that people might skip over this section because what they think we're talking about is simply taking the AOC and putting it in the bylaws. We're not. We're actually talking about taking the AOC and redrafting it, adding to it, making changes to it. So I think it's really important that we make sure that people understand that. It's on the agenda. It just refers to the AOC and so on. I want to make sure that everybody is aware. I don't have any problem with any of this stuff. But what I don't want is to find us in 2 months' time or 3 months' time with people suddenly realizing that we've recrafted a whole heap of stuff. So we really need to be very, very clear. Thank you.
Of the document that we put out for public comment, we'll probably need to side by side and explain the rationale for every change.
That's right. That's one of the aspects I think we need to have at the end of this conversation, is starting to highlight the various features we're introducing or changing for which you did. The next is Alan.
Thank you very much. I have a number of comments, but first a question for Steve. You've used the term community appoints. Now, in ICANN, we use that. There's two sort of meanings. One is each ACSO or whatever group it is appoints their people, or a community group comes together to do the selection and appointment. Which do you mean? I think you need some clarity there, because that goes to the diversity issue and other things like that.
Work with me on this. Compare the language in the affirmation to what's here, and it's ambiguous in the affirmation. We have the opportunity to make it clear here if we wish. And I would say currently we're just as ambiguous as the affirmation, because the review will be conducted by a volunteer community review team comprised of representatives of the relevant ACSO and SGs.
Mm-hmm.
So that could mean anybody who wants can volunteer, or it could mean that each of them appoints a representative or several representatives. Do we want to be clear on that? It would be good to get a sense of the CCWG if we want to be clear on that and link it in any way to the mechanism for the community, whether it's a council of councils or members or delegates.
I wasn't trying to advocate one or the other, but as Sebastian said, some people worry about balance. If you look at the composition of the, I think it came up most in the ICG, the community demanded that they each appoint their people, and then people complained about balance. Well, you can't have it both ways. So we need to be definitive as what we're trying to achieve and then make it clear so there isn't ambiguity there. A whole bunch of things, and I'll try to be quite brief. The AOC was drafted in 2009.
it used 2009 language or the best we thought we could. We've learned a lot since then by doing some of these reviews, and some of the language itself changed. So I personally would not put who is in our bylaws today. I would say generic, directory services, and perhaps a reference to what it is today. But let's try to keep it general. But there's a lot of other examples. As a member of ATRT2, we felt rather frustrated that there was wording put in Section 9 of the AOC describing our review, and we had NTIA people on the committee who basically said we have to follow those exact words. They are less than appropriate, and our report was significantly weaker because we were limited. I can make a number of suggestions, so I really think we want to try to approve things. There's a concept in there that the ATRT reviews the other reviews.
Page 4 for everyone.
Yeah. I'm not trying to redraft here. I'm talking about concepts. We decided in ATRT2 that we would review whether the reviews were sort of were listened to by ICANN, but not the technical evaluation of did they really do the who is things. So we sort of took half of it out and said the other half will be done by the other review team. Because of the timings of them, it was a really awkward thing to do. I think we need to fix that. And again, we had pushback from NTIA saying that's not what we meant, but what they meant doesn't work. I won't go into all of them. I'll document them later.
In writing.
I will. The spacing, you should be aware that you didn't change 3 to 5. You changed 3 to 6+. As long as you're aware that you did it consciously, because the original content of implication of 3 says the next one will start 3 years after the previous one started, not after it was proposed. So I'm happy with changing 3 to 6+, but we should know we're doing it, and it's not an accident. That's it. Thank you.
I'm conscious of time, and we still have a lot on our plate, so I'm closing the queue after Jan, and I'm urging people in the queue to try and make brief and focus on the higher level requirements or key issues they think we need to address. And then I will try we will try with your help to recap, as we did yesterday, that what we have in common in terms of to give guidance to the group. So next is James.
Hi, this is James. So just for some context from my remarks, I do security and risk management as my day job, so I'm possibly hypersensitive to this. For the SSR reviews, I would have serious concerns about moving them out to 5 years. 3 years is almost a push, in my opinion. One of the core things that the SSR would be reviewing is ICANN's security plan, which I would hope is nice and comprehensive. But in security terms, 5 years is an absolute lifetime. I would make an educated guess that the internal security plan of ICANN is changing on a monthly basis. So looking at an overall security strategy every 5 years is an extremely long time frame. If anything, apologies that I didn't look at the document earlier, but I would have been pushing to move it the other direction, closer down to a 2-year or a 1-year review. But 5 years in its security and stability terms and business continuity is an absolute lifetime. Serious concerns.
For the SSR review team, which starts in a few months?
I most certainly will.
Thanks. Next is Edward. Ed?
Yeah, thanks. Steve asked me to walk everybody through our current documentary disclosure policy, the DIDP. Theoretically, it's called the Documentary Information Disclosure Policy. The way it actually works, it's the non-disclosure policy. It's supposed to be ICANN's Freedom of Information Act. You want a document from ICANN, they have it. Unless there's a compelling reason, they have to give it to you. ICANN has lots of compelling reasons. They're listed in the defined conditions of non-disclosure, which are 12 reasons, ranging from attorney-client privilege, personnel records, to it's not reasonable for ICANN to disclose the documentation. So how does this process work? Staff decides what's made public or not. You don't see something that's out there in the open, you ask staff, through the DIDT.
Sorry to interrupt, but we're very short on time. So,
well, I'm going to make this point, Matthew. We're trying to work with Jordan and Becky to get the DIDP reviewed. We're not currently reviewing it. We have to. You cannot have accountability without transparency, and we've been given the short shrift. Let me give you the numbers. The numbers are stark. Since 2008, 76 requests for documents through the DIDP have been filed with ICON. 71% have been denied, citing the DCND. Since 2011, it's up to 81%. Since the NTIA announced the transition, it's up to 94%. You cannot get documents from ICON. In the system, Lee talked about precedent, the value of precedent. My favorite denial came last year when a third party that had an interest in a CEP extension that was given to Donuts, independent review extension. They said, ICON, why did they get the extension? Give us the documents. Well, ICON says, well, we can't give you that because that is a confidential business, for confidential business reasons, or it's an internal policy or goal. So we have no idea why Donut was given the extension. There's no precedential value, and it's confidential. So we're in a organization where accountability itself is non-transparent, and it has to change. And I hope you guys will commit to doing the review of the DIDP, because as Jordan and Becky can tell you, I've been on their case for 6 to 7 weeks trying to get this done. Thank you.
Edward, I think the point is well made, and I'll come back to this aspect when I try and wrap up. I am informed that Jonathan was on the list as well, but got dropped unfairly as well. So I have Matthew, Shears, Jan, and Jonathan.
Thanks, Chair. Steve's done a great job of summarizing the work we've done in WP1. And a couple of issues that were left over that weren't part of the reviews have been moved into Becky's work, but there are still two issues that are kind of hanging out there that we need to find a home for. Both of them are related to accountability and transparency in Articles 7 and 4 of the Affirmation and Commitment, so that's just a flag that those still need to be accounted for. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jan Schulte. As advisors, we're meant to hover rather than be in the bowels, and this discussion is mostly in the bowels of detail. But I'm just, as we're listening, I'm thinking that we've gone through, I think, probably 9 hours of discussions now, and each time, or many times, one hears the community will do this and the community will do that, and this, in this case, on appointing the review teams and so on. And I keep having this question in the back of my head, the accountability of the community. I just want to say it one time, because we do say it every now and then it disappears. And then in the discussion of all the things, we know in the back of our heads that it's an issue, but it's lost every time again. And I'm just thinking that when the congressional hearing comes, or when NTIA wants to look at it, anyone who wants to scupper this proposal will be looking for a reason. And if the stakeholder accountability isn't addressed, I think they'll go for that as the jugular.
A point that I was actually planning to address this afternoon when we try and recap the overall stuff, so I think we'll come back to this, certainly. So, Jonathan, and then I'll try to take stock of our discussion.
Thanks, Jonathan Zook, for the transcript. I want to go back to Cavus's second comment about not having future DTLD rounds until the recommendations are implemented, and I feel like that sort of speaks to this question of community accountability, or accountability of ICANN to the community as a whole, perhaps even beyond the ICANN regulars, et cetera, is the notion that in each of these reviews, proposals are made for things to happen for a reason, and if we don't measure whether or not we accomplished what we meant to accomplish with each of those recommendations, then the whole thing just becomes a sideshow. It becomes a joke to actual policy development accountability. And so I want to definitely strongly agree with the notion that in the case of CCT, that there aren't new rounds of TLDs until recommendations are implemented, so that they're not just irrelevant. But I think we also need to find a way in each of these reviews to review the progress somehow of the things that were recommended along the way, make sure they were implemented, and without a GTLD program to kind of hold up how do we force implementation in a timely way? What's the stick in that case as opposed to holding up a program the way that we have in the case of the GTLD program? There needs to be a way to create momentum behind the implementation of these recommendations in the other reviews and not just in that one, but certainly in that one.
Do you want to answer this question?
One quick thing, Jonathan, and I think that Avery brought this up. If you look at the ATRT, item F under the ATRT review is assessing the extent to which they've implemented the recommendations arising out of the other periodic reviews in this section. So that was part of what ATRT 2 was able to do. Couldn't do it on ATRT 1 because there hadn't been any other reviews. So it's supposed to be in there, and I don't know whether that gives you the momentum and leverage you were talking about.
Really didn't, given the number of things that were not implemented. So the fact that threat that they were going to be reviewed later didn't cause an expedited implementation of those initial recommendations means that it's not a sufficient stick to get them implemented in a timely manner.
That's in Frankfurt, I believe it was Alan, on the mind map we had up on the wall in Frankfurt, one of the powers we had for the community was the ability to force management to implement recommendations from review teams that had previously been approved but hadn't yet been acted on. And that's a community power that's been in the Work Party 1 inventory somewhere, Jordan, but I think we probably need to revisit that too.
To revisit that in light of the existence of the IRP, where the community could go to the IRP to, say, force it to act against an inaction from the board. But that's something to revisit in terms of consistency overall. I'd like to take stock of what I've heard so far so that we provide guidelines for the group on this aspect. I think so. There's a group proposal for the board to consider implementation to change the way the board is actually taking into account the phrasing, at least for taking into account the recommendations. And there's this remark to be taken into account, but otherwise, I think this is pretty much going in the right direction. Are there any other objections onto that? You have a question, Chris?
Just to build on Jan's point about the challenge of what the community is and being sure that we explain, and I have some thoughts about that which we'll get to later, but my question is this working group or this subgroup looking at the actual mechanism that you would use to make all these calls for things to be looked at? Because it strikes me that a lot of stuff is the community will be able to force this, the community will be able to make this happen. Now, all of that stuff is fine, but it all needs to actually have some kind of mechanism. And if by the community we mean the community, in other words, a number of SOs or ACs or bits of them, then they're going to need to come together to make all of that happen. And it strikes me that we're using an awful lot of large coming-togethers of the community to make some quite small things happen. And I wonder whether we're going to look at that as a sort of overall stress test, et cetera.
That was a big talk yesterday morning when Jordan put up a matrix showing five different potential ways to structure, quote-unquote, the community. And until we figure that out, whether it's permanent cross-community working group members, delegates, until we can figure that out, Chris, we use the shorthand word, the community. There's a hope that one of those structures, council, for instance,
right.
One
Maybe
of those structures will work for everything,
yeah.
But there's an acknowledgement that it may not work for everything.
Because I thought that what those gray boxes were about was looking at the structure you would use for any of the four major topics that we talked about: bylaw, blocking, spilling the board, budget, and something else. I'm fine with this,
all
just so we're clear. We're
saying these two.
But that would mean then that if we settled on we would need to settle on different levels, because you couldn't have a situation where you had the same barrier to spill the board as you do to have something else revisited. Right.
Mechanism, but there'd be different voting thresholds for each thing.
After the coffee break, if we can make a coffee break, so if we can proceed. But I think this one thing that I want to stress is the review system is the continuous improvement part of ICANN. It's the commitment for ICANN to continuously improve based on bottom-up processes, multi-stakeholder processes. It is not meant to be the binding part, which is the appeals mechanism we've been discussing. And I think that's the initial contrast that within the existing ICANN, some were expecting the review system to be the binding thing on ICANN, and I agree with Chris. It doing reviews and list of recommendations is not the most appropriate improvement system you can make, because in the continuous improvement, well, you have to focus at some point. Otherwise, you don't deliver anything else, and it's very difficult. So it's a difficult balance. But the agreements I see is on enhancing transparency. So the first one is might be on the AVRI report, on the AVRI annual report. And the second one is the work that we need to still flesh out on the document information disclosure policy. Are there any objections to these increased transparency features? Yes? So you just want the conversation to go on, that's right? You don't want coffee.
No. There was an expression used in ATRT2 of a culture of openness. And we need something like that, because these are specific embodiments. But I think we need something, you know, maybe it's a core mission, a core value that we do not have right now. And I think we need to generalize and not have specific things.
Yeah, but values and mechanisms don't create culture. They create incentives for the culture to strive, whatever you call it. But the ideal world would be the culture. Avery, you want to react?
Sorry, I lost my connection on the network. We also talked about a notion in the ATRT report of a default, and refer back to it, of a default transparency, where basically everything was transparent unless there was a stated reason for it not being. And that's something that really hasn't come about even after two ATRTs.
Okay.
Pushed for it.
So that's one clear direction that I'm hearing from the group. The notion of flexibility on the periods of reviews, I've heard some inputs on the proposals that might need to be refined.
Then 5 years.
Yeah, but for the security one, trying to ignore the noise. For the security one, I think there were that's something that we need to consider. And so that I don't think we can say now that we there's full agreement on the existing proposal, so we need to further work on that. But some flexibility on some reviews, at least, I think is something that's okay to consider, obviously, because of volunteer fatigue as well as the ability for the organization to implement all the recommendations. There was a discussion on the relationship between GAC and effectiveness in the wording, which clearly, where we have, I think, a promising approach to build on. But that needs to be, it's certainly something, unless someone objects, that I think we should pursue to clarify. No one's objecting. And Steve, am I missing any feature in your recommendation that you would need to have confirmation that a group agrees on, or if there's any objection?
It says no less frequently than every 5 years. If the community felt compelled, the community, Chris, right, felt compelled to do a security, stability, resiliency review every year, it could. It could, even under the current affirmation of commitment.
I think that's certainly something the group should discuss further before we can actually say this is our CCWG recommendation. And regarding community selection plus diversity, That's also somewhere where I think we need to be creative about how we are going to combine those two and be explicit about the selection process we're setting up.
I suggest, though, that in the chat and in the discussion, if there's a balance between diversity and autonomy, autonomy wins. We have to be able to select the people we want to be on that team. The best people from the ALAC, the best people from the CSG, and not be told, nope, sorry, can't have them. There should be aspirations for diversity, for sure. But when it comes to a balancing, remember Becky brought up this notion of balancing core values? This is one where I think the balance is going to tip towards getting the right people on the review.
There is a need for balance, and before I turn to Sebastian, I'd say I fully appreciate this, but I am hearing the notion of best as not in contradiction with more diversity at all, because how do you define best? Is that defined on experience within ICANN? No. That's not what we necessarily want. If we, I don't see where the contradiction is between best and diversity. So I think it's extremely important for our group that we overcome this, and I'm sure, I think we're currently in the bias of we know each other, and I see the advisors nodding. We know each other, and we know how we work, but this is our bias. This is our bias that we don't take diversity as actually creating the best people for the reviews. That, I think this is something where we don't have agreement now. It's not just a small minority objecting. I think there's more, and I'm hearing a lot from the outside of our group about this. And that's why I'm stressing it and stressing it again. This balance opposing the best people against diversity or the most representative of the communities and the autonomy of the communities and diversity, I think is dangerous for our group and for our proposals, because it's setting the stage for outsiders to just say that dismiss our proposals as being too self-serving. And so that's, to me, and speaking as co-chair, and I want to be able to express our proposals and show that they're taking into account the global community expectations. And that's to me, that's where some we haven't really refined this enough yet on this matter. So I wouldn't qualify this as we have agreement on this. We need to refine this. Sorry. Thomas, go ahead.
I think we do have agreement on the community to select that. I think we don't have to drill down to that detail. We're making sort of high-level recommendations here. So there needs to be a community process to select members, taking into account diversity standards. And I think if that's agreeable, we're done, right? And let the implementation find the correct language for it. But I think that's the guidance that we give, and it can be a little bit more high level, can't it?
Yeah, we can always work on the level of details. Sebastian.
I will try to summarize. Individual best is not the collective best. And what we are looking for is a collective best. Thank you.
Sebastian. I see there are... Matthew, is that an old hand? Yes. Two last comments standing between us and coffee. Alan, is that an old hand? That's what I feared.
I'll be very short. I do not think we have come to closure on what we mean by community selects. One of the things we didn't even talk about was there's a pre-stage before the selection that is deciding how many of each from each group are on a review team, and they've changed every single time, and it's a really political issue. I'm not sure the community can decide that itself without a lot of fistfights or something like that. And to be honest, we have a problem in ICANN attracting diversity into the group. That's the problem. Some of you
I'm sure some groups within ICANN have a surplus of really good people, and they can pick which one is the right one. Within at large, we have often found that we do not have a surplus of good people. And if we want to put someone on who's not going to, and I'll be quite candid, embarrass us and hurt the group, we don't have a lot of choice sometimes. So we've got to remember the realities.
Malcolm, and then Coffee.
Really? Thank you. Yes, Mathieu, I really just took the floor to say that I was troubled by how strongly you were putting that. I share, from the ISP constituency, we have a relatively small number of people, and we would find strict diversity requirements would be very constraining in anything that we're asked to contribute to. And more generally, I fear that too strict diversity requirements of the kind that's being taught tends to encourage protected or supported categories such as gender diversity and regional diversity at the expense of viewpoint diversity.
Please consider that I have not mentioned any kind of diversity requirement, nor any mechanism. So this is pure speculation about what was implied. However, I note that this is the typical diversity discussion in any context. And, I mean, there's the kind of discussion we have here exists in all diversity discussions, whether it's social diversity requirements in companies and corporate social responsibility, whether it's women on boards discussions. This is exactly the kind of discussion that happens. So there are options out there, and we need to take a step back and look at them. That's what I meant. And I really looked to the external advisors for input here, because I think it would be a very valuable zone of input on best practices. Enlightening for us to have stories from the outside. I think this closes it. I just want to stress how great a work it's been from the group so far. And this direction, we need to stay focused at the requirement level for our proposals, because, and as Chris said, this is what we want to draw attention to rather than the wording. But at least having this is a demonstration that we can move forward fast on that. And we've identified a few items for further work. But clearly, incorporating the system of reviews is part of our recommendations. Thomas, you don't want us to go for coffee, right?
Exactly, I don't want us to go for coffee. But as we continue thinking about this, and I'm particularly responding to Alan, we're talking about language to go into the bylaws, and we can't put all the glorious detail into the bylaws. So I think that, you know, with the general statement that I suggested, we give enough room to have all that drilled down at a later stage in another forum.
So the coffee break is going to be open for only 15 minutes, so we reconvene at 11:30, and we still have plenty of work to do. Thank you.